from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The Trinidadian Prime Minister comes out batting on his row with the President. Dominica's leader accuses the opposition of having sinister links with the Unification Church. And death row prisoners in Antigua are given a temporary reprieve. I'm Oren Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The Trinidad and Tobago Prime Minister, Bas Diopande, says he expects that President Ian R. Robinson will sack the two Tobago senators and appoint two others in their place. It's Mr. Robinson's refusal to do so that has brought the country to the verge of what commentators are describing as a constitutional crisis. Mr. Robinson told BBC Caribbean Report yesterday that he was acting to preserve the union of Trinidad and Tobago because revoking the appointment of the two senators could endanger that union. The president's powers are largely ceremonial, and he's expected to act on the advice of the prime minister. But Mr. Robinson counters that preserving the state is a presidential interest, and he raised the temperature slightly when he all but accused the prime minister of lying about the affair.
The prime minister has stated that I told him to suspend the meetings between us. Well, I mean, that's a blatant untruth. My whole matter of how the letters reached me when the letter, prime minister's letter, was sent. You know, again, untruths were told, blatant untruths.
Ian R. Robinson. Well, watching everything is Sir Ellis Clark, Trinidad and Tobago's last governor general and their first president when they became a republic 24 years ago. I asked Sir Ellis if Mr. Robinson was right to act as he did.
He didn't really ask anything, you know. He declined to make the appointments that he was advised to make.
Was he right to decline making the appointments?
The point is that he claimed his undoubted prerogative to have an opportunity to consult with the Prime Minister, to counsel and advise him, and if necessary, to warn him.
But was he right to, in effect, countermand the Prime Minister's orders?
He didn't countermand them, you see. All that he has done is to say, look here, this is a matter of such importance that I would like to confer with you about it. He has not refused to do it. Since then, the Prime Minister has conferred with him and will be conferring with him further tomorrow and has written to him. If after this he then declines to revoke the appointments and make the new ones, he would in those circumstances be in breach of the Constitution. If by Monday the President refuses to act on the advice that the Prime Minister has tendered, then there would be a constitutional crisis.
We haven't reached that stage as yet.
We haven't reached that stage yet.
But the fact is that the chief executive and the head of state are embroiled in a disagreement in which they're publicly exchanging their views. The president has gone so far as to suggest in an interview with us that the prime minister wasn't completely truthful. Given all that, is there a way out of this?
Oh, yes, I think there is. And I think that the simple way out of it is for the president to say, now that I have had my say, now that I've pointed out this and that to you, you insist on doing so and so, very well, constitutionally I must do it.
So President Robinson should back down?
Well, I wouldn't call it backing down. I would say he would have made his point and acted properly.
Will it become a resigning issue for him, the president, if even after the further consultations with the prime minister, he still feels as strongly as he does about not doing as he is instructed to?
Then there would be a constitutional crisis.
Under those circumstances, would it be a resigning issue for President Robinson?
No, I'm sure he wouldn't resign. I'm sure he wouldn't.
Sir Ellis Clark, when I spoke with the Prime Minister Bas Diopande a short time ago, he began by giving me the news that his meeting tomorrow with Mr. Robinson has been postponed at the President's request. It means that the Senate cannot sit, since the status of the two dissident senators remains unresolved. But what about the president's justification that he was acting to preserve the union? I put that to Mr. Pandey, and I suggested as well that Sir Ellis seemed to be saying that constitutionally, Mr. Robinson had covered himself.
It will not damage the relationship because the two new persons who are being appointed are indeed from Tobago. I think what Sir Ellis said was that he had said that I would not appoint them until I meet you to consult with you and advise you and warn you and so on. But that meeting did, in fact, take place on Friday last, where he did warn and did counsel and did advise. And I've said, okay, you have performed your constitutional duty. Now I must perform mine. Will you kindly appoint the two new senators?
So it came down purely and simply to a battle of wills at which you were determined to prevail?
I don't think so. I think the president will see that it is his constitutional duty to appoint the senators as advised by the prime minister in accordance with the constitution.
Why did you go public with this issue, Mr. Prime Minister? Because President Robinson suggests that is why he in turn went public.
Oh, no, please. You must follow the chronology of the thing. I never went public with anything. It is when I received Mr. Robinson's letter, Mr. Robinson also made it public. And for that reason, it was unavoidable that I should make my response to him public.
Do you think that Mr. Robinson is exceeding his presidential authority?
If he refuses to appoint the senators as advised by the Prime Minister, he certainly is.
What would happen if Mr. Robinson was to stick with his position that he couldn't possibly revoke the appointment of the two senators and appoint two others in their places? What would happen then?
I do not contemplate that situation because I do not think it will arise. The president is a lawyer. I'm sure he has proper advice, and I am sure he will do what is constitutionally correct.
Damage has been done in this situation because words have been exchanged. In fact, the president has said, you've been less than truthful in explaining the issue. Can the two of you continue to work together?
Well, I certainly do, because I don't believe that people in public office are allowed the luxury of private views impinging and influencing their public duty.
What about the suggestion from the president, though, that you were less than truthful in explaining the issue?
I do not know specifically to what he refers, but I'm sure it would be an expression of opinion. And the documentary facts are there.
Trinidad and Tobago Prime Minister Bastio Pandey. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. In the middle of a tense election campaign in Dominica, the Prime Minister Edison James has linked the opposition leader Rosie Douglas to the Unification Church known as the Moonies. Mr. James had earlier made the link on a political platform where he suggested an alleged association between Mr. Douglas and the Moonies. He cited security reports about the activities of members of the group in Dominica in 1988 who said to have met with Mr. Douglas and who allegedly promised to fund the DLP campaign. In his address to the nation aired on state radio DBS, Prime Minister Jim said that police investigations had revealed a connection that the authorities could not ignore. He says there's evidence that the Unification Church had been able to maintain their interest in his words, subverting Christianity in Dominica through its alleged alliance with the Labour Party.
We have been reliably informed that consistent with their initial plan to unseat my government and thereby have their way, the Moonies have played a major role in financing the current election campaign of the Dominica Labour Party. In recent weeks, Mr. Douglas's unusual trips to Antigua and San Juan, Puerto Rico, have been explained by his party colleagues as missions to pick up money for the election campaign. Remember that the Front Moonie organization, Caribbean Free Teens Association, is actually based in Antigua. Remember, too, that the deported Moonie group, which had set up shop at Emsall initially, came over from the Antigua organization. This is the very group that indicated its preference for Mr. Douglas as leader of Dominica and pledged support for his party's election campaign. We are satisfied that having been overseas for 141 days in 1999, there was ample time for Mr. Rosie Douglas to meet his Moonie contacts and finalize campaign financing arrangements in exchange for whatever assistance the Moonies would need from a Labour Party government in order to establish their evil mission in Dominica.
Prime Minister Edison James, his call on religious leaders in the country has prompted the Methodist minister William Watty to caution against politicians playing the religious card in order to, he says, win votes and influence people. Meanwhile, the constitutional expert, lawyer Anthony Astafan, who's known to have close links with the Labour Party, has dismissed Mr. James' address as cheap politicking and an abuse of authority.
It was a very sad day for Dominico. I think all of us, most of us, with any sense of national pride, hung our head in shame. I could not believe it happened, that something that happened almost 2 years ago is being raised just prior to a prime ministerial debate on what is perceived to be, or purported to be, a prime ministerial statement. There is absolutely no precedent for it. There was no national security interest in issue. There was no public interest issue at stake. There was nothing of national great importance except a cheap political trick to discredit Mr. Rosie Douglas and the Dominican Labour Party.
Anthony Astafan. The Grenadian Prime Minister Keith Mitchell has been explaining why he's come out publicly against what he says is a lack of American support for CARICOM countries. Dr. Mitchell is criticizing America for its low level of aid to the region, and he told me he wants Washington's attention to be drawn to the fact that countries like Grenada do need U.S. support in specific areas.
Training of our people, the provision of support to access technological activities in general, and we believe they can help in the whole question of support for infrastructural development, which is so critical for us to prepare for the competition that's certainly on us already and certainly will be part of the 21st century. So we believe there are some crucial areas that can help the region, particularly the OECS countries at this particular time.
Why should they?
It's in America's interest also. They have been our traditional friends, and we are very closely related to America physically and otherwise. And given the problems that we face with the drug activities and the number of security issues that are confronting the region and America at this particular time, we certainly believe that it's in the best interest to help develop healthy economic life in the region, which of course would make it more difficult for the drug lords and other people involved in illegal activities to poison the area and therefore create problems in the American area too.
It's one thing to say they should help, but do you detect a mood in Washington, a willingness to help?
I assume over the period of the debate over the banana issue that a number of key issues have emerged and we certainly have informed American decision makers as to what is in their best interest. I believe and I hope that we will see a turnaround in the not-too-distant future. Some signals have been reported to us. But certainly, as I said, I have no definite thing to hold on to at this particular time. But I expect that we will see some changes, especially when it looks clearly in America's best interest to do so.
Grenada's Prime Minister Keith Mitchell. Hangings won't be resumed in Antigua this week as they had been scheduled to. Five death row prisoners who are to have been hanged tomorrow and Friday have all been given a stay of execution to make a final appeal to the Privy Council. Four of the men were given 21 days to sort this out. A fifth, Michael Mason, who is said to have exhausted all his appeals, was given a temporary reprieve of 15 days. The death row prisoners who were to have been executed include Barbudians Melanson Harris and Marvin Joseph. Both men were convicted in February of 1996. For killing four people, two Americans and two Britons, who were holidaying at the time. The EU Trade Commissioner has called on the World Trade Organization to launch a new round of talks this year. The request comes just weeks after the failed Seattle summit. Talks were scheduled to take place after U.S. presidential elections, but the EU wants them to be brought forward. They're also proposing a package of concessions for developing countries. Robert Andrew reports.
Pascal Lamy, the European Union's Trade Commissioner, is pursuing what the Financial Times has called a high-risk strategy, which focuses on two crucial areas that block the Seattle round. The first is the role of developing nations who struck up a moral victory in Seattle. For many years, they have argued that the organization worked in favor of the richer nations, and they want their role in a globalized economy to take on a new shape, one that they hope will balance out the uneven playing field that is world trade. So as a first step, Mr. Lamy wants agreement on a small package of concessions for poorer nations. The other area of particular concern would be to reform the inner workings of the organization. Although the changes are not clear, the Financial Times reports that they may include improvements in the way meetings are organized, greater participation of developing countries, as well as increased transparency. Last month's talks in Seattle collapsed after members failed to reach any consensus on crucial areas such as agriculture, biotechnology, and environmental issues. Mr. Lamy said if talks were not relaunched as soon as possible, that it would be catastrophic.
Robert Andrew, ending BBC Caribbean Report. Before we go, here's a reminder.
This and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
I'm Oren Gordon saying goodbye from London.